Chapter 4. I had completely forgotten that we had asked Lawrence Redding to dinner that night. When Griselda told me, I was shocked.
"I've thought about what you said at lunch," she told me, "and I've found some good things to eat."
Sadly, our dinner only proved Griselda had been right when she'd said that the more she tried, the worse things went. The menu was expensive, but Mary seemed to have enjoyed undercooking and overcooking everything. However, Lawrence Redding was a very good guest. He has dark hair, his eyes are bright blue, and he can tell a good story. Griselda and Dennis kept telling jokes, and Lawrence cheerfully joined in. However, I was not surprised when, after dinner, he suggested we went to my study. As soon as we were alone, his manner changed.
"This isn't the usual sort of love affair between Anne and me."
I told him that people had been saying that since the beginning of time, and a strange little smile touched his lips.
"Of course, if this were a book, the old man would die, and no one would be sorry."
I told him that was a cruel thing to say.
"Oh, I didn't mean I was going to put a knife in his back, though I'd thank anyone who did. I'm surprised the first Mrs. Protheroe didn't kill him. You don't know how Anne suffers. If I had enough money, I'd take her away now."
Then I spoke to him very seriously and asked him to leave St. Mary Mead. If he stayed, people would start to talk about his relationship with Anne. Colonel Protheroe would hear about it, and things would be made much worse for her.
"But everyone thinks my interest is in Lettice."
"Haven't you thought," I asked, "that Lettice might think that too?" Lawrence seemed surprised. Lettice didn't care about him at all. At that moment, Griselda and Dennis came in and said I must not stop Lawrence from enjoying himself.
"Oh, how I would like some excitement," Griselda said. "A murder, or just a robbery?"
"I don't suppose there's anything worth stealing," said Lawrence, "unless we stole Miss Hartnell's false teeth."
"They do make an awful noise," said Griselda. "But you're wrong about there being nothing worth stealing. There's some wonderful old silver at Old Hall, including a 17th century tatzer worth thousands of pounds." "The old man would probably shoot you," said Dennis. "Oh, we'd get him first and tell him to put his hands up," said Griselda. "Has anyone got a gun?"
"I've got a Mauser," said Lawrence.
"How exciting! Why do you have it?"
"Souvenir of the war."
"Protheroe was showing the silver to Dr. Stone today," said Dennis. "Stone was pretending to be very interested in it." "Well," Lawrence said, "I must go. Thank you for a very pleasant evening."
On Thursday, I was leaving the church and going home for lunch when I met Colonel Protheroe.
"Dead criminal, Mr. Archer," he shouted. "He came out of prison yesterday and is promising to punish me. Why? Because when I, as a magistrate, sent him to prison, I did not consider his wife and children. What nonsense! I am sure you agree with me."
"You forget," I said.
"As a vicar, I believe in forgiveness."
"Nonsense! What we need is strong Christianity. So, I'll come to the vicarage this evening, as we arranged, at 6:15.
And he walked away. I went home, had lunch, and went out again to visit some people. Griselda had gone to London by the cheap Thursday train. When I returned, at 4:15, Mary told me that Mr. Redding was waiting for me in the study. He looked very pale.
"Vicar, you were right. I must leave the village."
"I think you have made the right decision," I said.
"Will you look after Anne?"
"Of course. I will do everything I can to help her."
"Thank you."
He shook my hand.
"I will leave tomorrow."
When he had gone, I tried to write my sermon. But at 5:30, the telephone rang. I was told that Mr. Abbott of Low Farm was dying and asked to come at once. Low Farm was nearly 2 miles away, and I could not possibly get back by 6:15. I rang up Old Hall, but I was informed that Colonel Protheroe had just gone out. So I told Mary that I would try to be back by 6:30 and left.